Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Broke Girl Society podcast. I'm your host, Christina. Thank you so much for listening in. So today we are joined by Val and her husband, Mike. Val is going to share with us her journey of gambling harm and the process for her for recovery. And Mike is going to share the other side of this journey. He's going to share, you know, his thoughts and perspective as Val was battling her addiction and seeking recovery. And so it was a really great conversation to be able to talk to both somebody who struggled with it and then somebody who was kind of on the other side of it. Mike has his own journey and his own recovery that he'll share in this conversation as well. And he brings a really amazing perspective. And so, yeah, I hope you guys enjoy this conversation. Thanks so much. The Broke Girl Society podcast is sponsored by The Better Institute, where people go to get better. To find out more about their services, visit betterinstitute.com. We are also sponsored by Burgess Health, an online gambling addiction therapy platform. For more information about their services, visit burgesshealth.com. Okay, guys, today we are here with Val, and Val is here to share her story of her journey with gambling harm and her recovery journey. But we also have her husband, Mike, joining us to kind of share his perspective on this journey as well. So hi, Val.
Hey, Christina, how are you?
Good. I'm so glad to be doing this. This is a conversation we've been wanting to have for a little bit. And so I'm excited to be doing this with you.
Me too. Grateful to be here.
I want to say hi to Mike. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Thanks so much for doing this. This isn't an opportunity that the listeners have really gotten experience is the partnership side of this journey. So, and I call it a journey because I'm always just curious how people identify with their own journey. So I don't like to put words in other people's mouths, but yeah. So I guess we'll just go ahead and get right on into it. And we'll ask Val about gambling for her. Like, where did it kind of start for you? And did you have experience with addiction prior to gambling?
So, no, I don't think I did. I mean, you know, sometimes I always wonder, like, if you do anything, sometimes you ask yourself, I guess, like whether it's, well, actually I would say, yes, I did in the sense that I smoked for years. I smoked for 20 years. So that was my addiction from high school until, in my 30s, actually until a year after we married. But I grew up in a church-going Christian home. My dad was a preacher. So, you know, it was like we were in church three times a week. But I mentioned that just because there was like absolutely no exposure to gambling in my home. You know, I know I've heard a lot of people say like, you know, they went with their parents, that kind of thing. That definitely was not happening in my childhood. But I was a tomboy. And so I always liked sports. I always liked competition. And I loved games. And, you know, when I think about like, what was my first experience of gambling, I didn't call it this, but I do remember when I was in elementary school, it was a big deal when this carnival came to town, like once a year. And they would have, along with, you know, just like a small version, like rides and stuff, they always had these games. And I just remember, like, even in elementary school, loving these games. And I think about one in particular where you put a quarter down on a number and they spun the wheel. And if it landed on your number, you got this entire pack of candy, like not just a little pack of candy, but like what they, you know, what you would see in the store. And I just was amazed by that you could win this big cap, you know, this big thing of candy by just doing it. And I just remember like being like, looking for that carnival to come back to town the following year, because I it was really about the games for me. But really just when it comes to gambling, I never gambled until I was 43 years old. I was on a trip for work. The trip was in Vegas, and I was familiar. I had, you know, certainly done card games before, like just for fun. I still remember like even in high school and college, loving to play spades. I had certainly played blackjack, like just for fun, but I mean, not even frequently, but I understood the game of blackjack. And so, since I was in Vegas, I decided I'm going to give this a try. Cause that was like, I understood the basic concept. And so I did like a real low limit table, you know, probably $5 a hand or something. And one of those things like where And at that level, you know, the dealer being super nice and teaching me the game. And I fell in love with it. And I just remember he was like coaching me along and saying, see how that works. And I just loved the idea of like that there was a strategy to this game, that you could, you know, that a strategy could work. And so in that trip, and as a matter of fact, I remember like it was a work trip first. And then Mike actually flew out because we were running a half marathon in Vegas. And so I don't even remember if I played again while he was still there. But I just remember thinking like that was a lot of fun. And I think I even came home and either somebody gave me a book or I went and bought a book about like the big book of blackjack. And I just fell in love with that game. But in my state, we didn't have live table games at the time. So, and that was like December of 2006. So I don't know that I really even like came right back home and started gambling. I don't think that happened, but I do remember that I then like couldn't wait until the next time I had a work trip in a state that had casinos. Like that's, I just remember that was what was on my mind all the time. And I just wanted to go back to Vegas. For where I am, it's quite a ways. It's not like it's a weekend trip. So I do think I was hooked then. I think I was thinking about it all the time, even if I wasn't going. And we did have, we have casinos in my state, but we didn't have live table games. So it wasn't like I got back home and just immediately went to the casino. I can't even remember how long it was before I visited our casino the first time. But at some point I did discover that we had electronic blackjack because we didn't have table games yet. We actually got live table games in 2010, I think. But anyhow, so I got hooked on these electronic blackjack games, and I would go, definitely like if Mike was out of town, because that was, you know, great. Nobody's keeping tabs on me. I'm, you know, free to go. I think maybe I would go on a weekend or something, but it was probably, you know, a couple of hours at a time. Maybe it wasn't what it turned into years later. But anyhow, and so, yeah, I would do different trips. You know, I remember like at one point for work, I had to go to Canada. I had to go to Edmonton, Alberta. And I would look up, like, I had no idea where I was. There wasn't Uber at the time. So it wasn't like catching an Uber. And I remember like looking up, where's this casino? And it was November, I think, of 2008. So we're talking a couple of years. And I remember like it being like really cold. And I just like walked to this casino that was some hole in the wall place. I remember being very disappointed because it was just kind of a hole in the wall place. But again, it was like, I don't care. It's a casino. And I don't even remember if I stayed very long because I think it was just so kind of shabby and I don't know. But anyhow, it was, but just an example of like, no matter where I went, if there was a casino, I would try to get there and play.
How often were you gambling at this time, though, like to actually go out of your way to seek out a casino in a place that you're unfamiliar with and a time before like Uber, which I know people use taxis before Uber.
Yeah.
It's still just it's hard to kind of recollect sometimes, but put yourself in like a very unknown situation.
Yeah. You know, I'm not even sure because I definitely wasn't playing, you know, like daily. I mean, cause we didn't have it here. You know what I mean? So it really was only when I traveled, and work trips weren't like every weekend or every week. It was probably maybe three or four times a year. So it wasn't even that often, but I do believe that I was going into the casino and doing the electronic blackjack and probably just like a weekends only thing at that point, you know what I mean? Or just, you know, maybe in the summertime, maybe more, but definitely not like an everyday thing.
So if Mike was out of town, you'd visit the casino, but it wasn't like something that you were actively searching out daily.
Right. Correct.
Okay.
Thinking about it all the time, probably like just, you know, and not, and like being very, look very much looking forward to, you know, whether it was a vacation or whatever, that would be in my mind, but I didn't really say anything about it. And so I really don't know when I moved from just the electronic blackjack to slots, but I know that it was somewhere in that maybe, I mean, it might've been within a year or two, somewhere in that range, because I do remember, and I think that the first time I tried a slot machine was because like the seats at the blackjack game were filled. And so maybe I sat down and played slots. I do remember the first time the bells went off. And at that time, they would even do that for like a $500 hand pay. Like it wasn't anything big, but I remember that and going, holy cow, like that was easy. And also though being embarrassed by it, you know what I mean? Like I didn't want people looking at me and the bell was really loud and annoying. But anyhow,
you didn't want the attention to focus on what, yeah. Like, cause you didn't feel like, it's interesting. And I want to talk about this is like, you didn't feel like you should probably be there. Right. So that like, was there a sense correct. Of like, I shouldn't be here. It's like you're telling like something subconsciously is telling you this isn't where you should be. So it's like you don't want any attention brought to the fact that you're there, or the money that you're winning or losing or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, as a matter of fact, I think at least for the first 2 or 3 years that I wasn't even telling Mike that I was going. You know what I mean? Later, and I think that was actually part of the whole addiction thing anyhow was, but in the beginning, I would not even tell him that I was there. And maybe I might've said something about like, they always had these different periodic competitions and contests and stuff to enter. And I might've said something like, I'm going to pop in and do this, but I definitely wasn't telling him that I was going because on some level I like felt that it was wrong to do it in the first place. And that did eventually change, by the way. And as a matter of fact, I remember actually thinking, oh, it's better that I tell him I was still lying because I was saying things like, I'm running errands and stopping at the casino to do my free play is one of 5 things that I'm going to do. And what I would really be doing is just going to the casino and not doing those other 4 things. But it was like things that can take up a lot of time so that he won't really know how much time I'm at the casino, you know. But I felt it was better that at least then if somebody said, I saw your wife there, or as a matter of fact, I still remember, I think before I got to that point, I was leaving the casino, pulling out onto the highway, and a kid hit me, and I actually had this accident. And I was more freaked out about how am I going to explain why I'm pulling out of the casino than my car being hit. You know what I mean? And sure enough, I just made up a lie and said, oh yeah, I had stopped there to drop off this, you know, whatever it was, contest entry or something. Because at that time, like it wasn't even that common of a thing for me to be there, at least as far as he knew, you know what I mean? And so, but eventually like I did, like it was, I think he knew that I was quite possibly like stopping every day, but I would play it off like, oh, I'm doing my free play. Even though free play was $15 and should have never taken hours and hours. He had no concept of, at least in my mind, he had no concept of how long free play would take to play, how much it was, or, you know, why I would be there that long.
What are your thoughts on that, Mike, as you're listening to this?
I agree. I didn't know. I mean, I think there was a level of trust there that I wanted her to be able to do things that she enjoyed. And it really didn't, I mean, later on when she told me she was gone, it really didn't bother me at first, you know, so, cause I don't gamble. So I had no interest in going. I didn't think anything of it really at that time.
Kind of compared it to like, you have your activities, that mm-hmm. you like to do, and kind of compared it to that. Like if you want to go golfing or something, it was kind of like, hey, that's something that she does. Is that a fair assessment?
Oh, absolutely. And we both had work that kind of kept us out of the house a lot. So we were both busy and it really didn't click until later. But I mean, we'll talk about that later, but didn't click until later.
Until more of like, the actual conversation of what was going on kind of start to set those thoughts in motion.
Yes. I mean, I knew at the end she was spending a lot of time, and I'd even say, I don't know how you could sit there for 8 hours and just sit in front of a machine. And, but I didn't want to. So I guess she'll talk about this, but she used to give me half her winnings, or so she said. So kind of like I'd come home, I'd go to bed and I'd get up in the morning, there'd be $300 on the dresser. So I think in her mind or whatever, it kind of like appeased me for a little while. And then you know, come to find out later that sometimes there wasn't winnings. But I think the big thing that got me was when she entered, they had a big football pool at our casino, and she'd go every single day to put in entries. And I thought, wow, you're dedicated to that football way more than I was. I certainly was not that into it. So
that's an interesting like insight into the dynamic of a gambler and somebody that isn't a gambler. But let's see what Val's thoughts on that was.
Yeah. So that is actually, that is part of the story. I was thinking like, I really don't remember when I went. First of all, I actually think, if I'm honest, that gambling was a problem for me from the very beginning, even if it was just weekends or whatever, because I was thinking about it way too much. And even if I wasn't losing ridiculous amounts of money or anything like that in the beginning, I do know that like in 2009, I actually called our state's, you know, helpline and said, like, I can tell that this is a problem. Like, I knew I needed help by 2009. I don't know when I went from I stopped playing the blackjack game and just went to slots, and enough that it, you know, that I knew I had an issue. But going back to that, like, I do think that it was those games where you could do an entry every day. And, you know, here's the thing, like, the logical intellectual part of me, like, knew, like, this is all, you know, bullshit. You know what I mean? Like, they're just trying to get me in. I knew it. And I also couldn't stop myself from still going and doing it and playing it. And those games did. They did have this like football game where you could do an entry every day and it would up your chances of winning that week's. And it really was about just, you know, guessing the wins for, you know, during football season. And so you could do an entry a day. And so obviously more entries you did, the more chances you had of scoring high that week. And what's ridiculous is think about how long a football season is. And at the end of the season, first place was like $1,000 or something. It was something ridiculous. And it was $1,000 in free play. It wasn't even $1,000. And I do remember winning it. Like, I don't know if it was the first year, but it was the second. But it was all about just getting in there every day. And so it started that way. And then the casino turned it into, well, you can't just come in and turn in an entry. You actually have to earn points by playing first. Then you can't, you know, it was really just
predatory.
Right. I mean, it's a right. Yeah, absolutely. But I played right into it anyhow, you know? And so, but so it was, so I was just lying through my teeth saying, yep, just going to pop in and pop out. I mean, sometimes I actually would, because I was just so into this game, but still it's still all the same thing, which is just being totally sucked in by competitions and games of chance. I mean, it's still all gambling. And so, he would, and I have always kind of been, by the way, like the type of person that, like, when I do something, like I go full in, you know, and whatever it is, at least for a while, anyhow, till I get tired of it. But anyhow, so I do think that that is when, and I don't even know the first year that they did that, but I think that is when I went from, I would only do this occasionally or when Mike, for a long time, when Mike was out of town, to every day. And then it also kind of made it okay, because I was telling him every day, like, and then if anybody saw me, oh yeah, I stopped in to do the game, you know, like it was, it just made it like, as if I wasn't lying as much, by at least he knows that that's where I am. But again, like it was a total lie, because he had no idea how much I was doing. And then, yeah, I did have this, and I did, I actually would say to myself, like, I'm bribing him by agreeing this. And it was this thing that I came up with. He never asked for it. And it was this, hey, let's make a deal. If I win, I'll give you 50%. I'll give you half. But if I lose, I won't expect anything from you. And then it became this thing, you know, it was like this thing of how much did I put on his dresser? And sometimes it actually was legit. Like, I had one and I did that and it was fun. But other times it would be like, I can't explain why I was gone that many hours without bringing something home. And so I would stop and get $40 or something just to, you know, and say like, man, I got it up a little bit, but I took it back down to, I mean, it was just ridiculous, you know, but, But I sort of felt like this is how I'm appeasing him by doing this.
And appeasing your guilt, right?
Oh, for sure. And it never occurred to me that he would much rather just have me home during that time. And whether it was sitting, not doing anything, but he would, that would have been much more important, at least at the end, you know what I mean? It because it was just all the time. And I know it went from doing that kind of thing on weekends, like, oh, there's a drawing this week, you know, tons of drawings on the weekends, or, you know, starting on a Friday or whatever, to, I realized near the end that I was still like, sometimes it would be a weeknight and we had to, you know, I had to work the next day. And I would realize, like, I'm here on a weeknight at 10 o'clock on a weeknight. You know what I mean? And it's like, I would have never done that. You know, it was just, I mean, I had to work the next day. And it still, though, was, and if he was out of town, it would have been 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning when I got home. You know, it was, I'd run home and feed my dogs and then come back. And I mean, it was just crazy.
So where did it really turn to this moment of like, I really need to recognize, like, not necessarily a rock bottom moment or something, but something that started to make you, I know you said you called in 2009, but when was the next time that you tried to address it?
Yeah. So when I called in 2009, I actually did sessions with this gambling counselor that the council provided. And I feel like I did, I remember we could have like up to 10 free sessions or something. And I think I did maybe 7 or 8, but he started saying, like, you know, you really need to tell your husband. You really need to tell your husband. And I had told the counselor, like, my husband has this many years of sobriety. He understands. And he would say he has a good frame of reference. Like, he would understand. And I knew that he would, but I also was like, absolutely not. I know my whole point of coming here is so that I can quit without having to tell him. And then maybe in 50 years, I'll say, by the way, 50 years ago, I just was like, absolutely not. And I don't know. It was less just like it was a non-starter for me that I was back in 2009. And of course, I think it also could have been that I wasn't ready to really quit then. And I also think that it was I don't know. I think it was just all the shame.
And fear. You know? I imagine fear was really a big piece of that. Because it was in my own story too. Like, fear of, like, what if they don't take it as well as we think that they might? Like, what is the consequences of it, right?
Yeah. And just telling him, you know, that for the last this many years, I've been lying to you, right? And so I really did then it was 13 more years, which just blows my mind in a way. That it was 13 more years of just getting progressively worse. Like, sometimes I don't even know how I lived through that, because I was thinking at times, like, it can't get any worse, and it would. And I think it was, and so I knew at least 5 or 7 years before I quit that it was like, I am not, this is terrible. Like, I can't stop doing this. Like, this is, it wasn't even like, oh, tomorrow. Like, no, like, I feel like I was actively trying to quit for at least the last 5 years. And I was reading every book that I could. I had not discovered podcasts or anything like that at the time. This was, you know, pre-pandemic. So I just couldn't find anything. And as a matter of fact, I was really disappointed. Like, I even looked up GA, and there was one single GA meeting in my town. And then I also thought, like, how am I going to go to a in-person GA meeting? Like, somebody might see that, you know what I mean? I can't fit that in, and keep it a secret. And so, I don't know what it was, except that, like, I just really got sick and tired of being sick and tired. You know what I mean? It was just, I think I purposely found the Bet Free Life with you and Brian on YouTube. And I, by the way, like, I would also watch gambling videos on YouTube, and there was these big spinners, and, you know, it's actually like a paid channel from these folks, right? And I remember watching that for hours and hours at a time, going, man, if I could, you know, win that much. But anyhow, I just remember, like, just night after night of screaming on my way home because, you know, and I remember like gambling and like telling people, anybody who was with me, if I was gambling with friends or whatever, like, I'm out of control. I can't look at this number. And I would be like where the credits are, you know, like I remember when I had 1,000 credits and I took it all the way down to zero. Like I just could not walk away with any money. I just couldn't, it was nuts. And I would, and again, it was that whole thing about next time it's going to be different next. And it was like, I almost knew before in the end, right before I quit, I knew before I went, I wasn't going to come home with any money.
Did you ever tell yourself if you just had one really big win, like you'd be able to clean everything up and be able to walk away? Did you ever tell yourself that? Cause that's something I told myself
did.
A lot.
I did. Absolutely. I did. And what's interesting you say that, because in early 2022, I went from like, I had my favorite slot machines, but then so we started playing these progressives, my friends and I. And I remember that in January, the end of January of 2022 is when I actually hit one of those progressives, a grand jackpot that, and as it turned out, like it, you know, it would start at one low amount, like, I don't know, it was five figures. I don't know, if numbers are a problem, but it was like, so it like would start at $10,000 and go up to almost $19,000. And as it turns out, like when I finally hit it, it's at the low end, you know, but it occurred to me that I finally hit this grand jackpot that we've all been waiting for. And it was basically one, you know, 40th, or it was such a small fraction of what I had actually been put. If I started, and I would get my win loss statements every year and be like, you know, I do remember hitting a point where I went, no matter what I do, no matter what I win, it's never going to actually make up for everything that I have. You know what I mean? So I felt I knew better, and I just could not, I still couldn't stop, you know? And when I hit that, I think it kind of really started around that time, though, because I finally hit this big thing and realized it is not even putting a dent in my bills. And like one of the things that I had done is for the longest time, I played with the ATM limits. I knew that I couldn't get out more than a certain amount every day. And then somebody tells me about, no, you can go to the cashier and do electronic checks. And that's when it also just like, that was the death of me. So I just started, it was basically overriding, you know, any kind of daily limit. And then I, you know, did credit cards, everything online so that I could keep it a secret, and then taking out a loan and then another loan and paying the credit card down and then bringing it back up. I mean, all that cycle that I think, you know, lots of gambling addicts are familiar with. And so then I did just start looking at, but always I'll say this, that maybe because I have a good paying job, I think it was also, but whatever the case, like I always still paid my bills on time. And I even had this hang up about, I did not get into the predatory loans and things like that. I always did things like my credit cards were going to be, you can forward this money. Yes, you pay this 3% whatever transfer fee, but you get 0% interest for this long. And I knew how long I had to pay it off. And like that stuff was still important to me, which is kind of crazy but I still ended up like I had tens of thousands of dollars in debt in addition to like just all the money that I had lost, you know what I mean? That I could have actually bought things with over the years. And I do remember like one of the things when I came clean with Mike is I said, like, we could have bought the house next door when it was for sale and had a rental or whatever, like our house could be paid for instead of us still paying for it. And so it was hundreds of thousands of dollars that I lost over the 13 years. And so, it, you know, like, and then I realized at some point that if I don't stop now, like I'm 60 now. If I don't, and so this was in 2022 that I placed my last bet. So I was 59 and I was thinking like, if I don't stop now, like I'm not going to be able to retire in 6 or 7 years. And this is going to catch up with me. I'm going to be found out and it's going to get so bad that I can't pay it down. And so I gotta do something. And that's where I did just get sick and tired of it. And if there wasn't even this big dramatic, like huge loss at a certain time, it was just, you know what? I did it again. And like I said, like I found your YouTube, the Bet Free Life. I listened to that. I saw all the links that were in the notes and I just started clicking on things. And I'm like, what's this Recovery Road Online that they're talking about? And I found those meetings first. And then I found some GA meetings. Everything has been online as far as my recovery. And so anyhow, yeah, and then when I found your Facebook page and group, that was the first time that I was in any kind of community. And I was like amazed that you could do this. Right. But I still even, I remember joining your Facebook group, like in the spring of 2022. And I still was like, I'm just going to do free play. And I was still just doing, it was progress for me because I wasn't spending my money anymore. And I was like, actually had a little bit of money in my bank account, but it still, you know, I still had not really let it go. And it was not until, it was like July, I don't know what it was about the July of that year, that made me finally quit. But I just decided like, no, I think it was just getting in the community enough and finding the community that I could just took a hold finally. And I was like, no, I'm done. And I think it was, listening to like people say, I still remember hearing one of the podcasts with Kitty talking about, or maybe something about her, or maybe it was an article that she did about take advantage of your high motivation moments. And I had been carrying around like the self-exclusion paperwork for my casino for, probably months. And I remember like, I'm doing it. I'm taking advantage of this high motivation moment. And I went and did that a week after I quit gambling, which has saved me multiple times. But still, you know, I still had not told Mike. So then instead of gambling in secrecy, I was trying to recover in secrecy. And it was July of 22 through the following March that I was still just, and I was like going out to the porch, going on the deck, going in the backyard, putting earbuds in, waiting until he was at his own meetings, because he's pretty active in his own recovery group. He'd go to meetings, then I would hop on meetings online. And I was just thinking like, this is, but it was all about, I think it was the shame, but also I was telling myself, I'm going to wait as long as I can because that'll let me pay down some of my debts. And like, I want to be able to show him like, look, I already did all this before I tell you, you know, like I already did all this. See, I'm like, I don't know what my thinking was, except that I really wanted to be further along in abstinence before I told him. I don't know if that was because, yeah, I don't know if it was like because I want him to know that I'm serious about this. I mean it, that it's not just because I don't know what it was, but and I liked a particular GA group, but then I sort of started feeling disconnected from it. And I think it was because like I had this obstacle, which is I'm not being totally honest. And I would get irritated because it would be like, really? The topic is honesty again. Like, and I was like, ugh. And I really couldn't, I was having trouble connecting because I felt like we were always talking about honesty, which makes sense because right. It's required for real recovery. And then I found Jeff's group, the PGSG support group online. And I really liked that because everybody talks at some point in the meeting and there's just some accountability there, but sure enough, like the topic comes up again, you know, about telling my husband. And it was just sort of a set of coincidence. What was not a coincidence, but I was feeling like it was coincidental. And then I heard the podcast with Jody Bechtold. I think it was her second or third one she did, but where she was specifically talking about, you know, coming clean to a loved one. And I was like, oh, this is all coming to a head. Like, I know it's time. And so I did, like, I remember her saying like, don't leave anything out, you know? And so I took my phone and I just started typing in my list And I did it, you know, it was, I think it was March 7th, of 23 last year. And, you know, it was just one time, like we were both sitting there in the living room and I just started crying and said, I got to tell you this. And
yeah,
it's still, you know, it's, it was, it still brings back the emotion. Cause he was so good. You know, he just got up and walked over and he just let me, you know, spit it all out. And he just kept saying, I love you. I love you. You know? And so it was just, anyhow, it was amazing.
What are your thoughts, Mike?
Well, I wish she would have felt comfortable telling me sooner because she's lived with me through my entire recovery. I'm going to celebrate 25 years sober next week. And so when she told me, I completely understood, you know, I understood, I understand the disease. I understand all the things that go along with that. And I knew that all I could do was love her, but I also needed, you know, I have to let her do her recovery. And I do mine. But you know, I didn't feel at first, I don't know what I felt, you know, I didn't feel, I don't know. I guess I just understood, you know, how this disease can grab you, you know? And, I know for me getting sober, my problem wasn't the alcohol, it was me. And I spend a lot of time trying to work on me and get away from the alcohol was just my solution to whatever else was going on with me. So I know that with Val, you know, Val, it's funny because Val's the, out of the two of us, the responsible one. I am pretty frugal with my money. So it was kind of, I don't know. It was, I kind of joked with my brother who's in recovery. I said, Val's one of us, right? We have this disease and we can all get through this together. And I just really know we keep our recoveries separate because I think that it's just really needed, you know. Val needs to do her thing. I need to do mine. And I support her and I don't try to, I don't go too deep into the past. You know, I think that, I felt a little betrayed around some of the lying, but, the material stuff, the money that's, you know, that really didn't mean a whole lot to me, that stuff that you can always get back. So, you know, I think we can just move forward and life is going to be good. We talk about retiring now. I think one of the things that kind of precipitated her telling me is we were going to remodel our house and I'd wanted to do it for a long time. And then, you know, then the talking about how much it was going to cost, I think kind of may have played a role in her. It kind of like everything came to a head at that time. So I'm just glad she told me and I support her 100%. And, you know, just that's it. I don't know what else to say, you know.
I think that's the beautiful thing about going through recovery, right? Is that it allows you this level of empathy that a lot of people don't experience. When you've been through the chaos of addiction yourself and you understand how addiction can just take hold and it takes mm-hmm. like the reasonable and throws it out, right? The things that we know we should be doing, the things we know we should be focusing on. And it just takes reason and throws it out the window. And then it just makes us do these things. And, you know, a lot of people's misconception is like, and it's not necessarily a misconception, but we have choices, right? We all have choices. We can choose to do things. But when you're fueled by addiction, it just makes those choices 10 times harder than most people who aren't struggling with an addiction to do. And I think when you've been through that experience and you understand that, it brings this whole level of empathy that a lot of people don't experience. And I think that is probably one of the most beautiful things that we can pull from our journey. And, you know, that's a wonderful example of it right there, is that the way that you showed up for her.
Yeah. I remember he said, you know, when I told him, like, I've got this many loans, and I actually said right away, like, and I'm going to pay them. And he actually said, I know I could help you do that, and I'm not going to, because I know you need to do that. That's one of the things, though, is like him just mentioning in his own recovery, is I also, like, I think that's why I also knew before I actually did quit and find recovery, that this was a problem. You know what I mean? Because I knew things, like, I already knew from his own recovery experience that it's not about the actual substance or behavior, that it is an emotional disease. You know what I mean? Like, that was not news to me. That's one of the first things he also said to me was, you know, it's not about the money. You know, it's about what you need to work on. And I was like, yeah, I know. You know, so there was a unique understanding that, you know, a lot of people probably aren't fortunate enough to have. So
I say, well, I've been sober 25 years. She's never seen me drink, but she's been, I mean, in my early recovery, when you're at your craziest, she was there with me to see me go through all that, you know. And hey, in recovery, I lied about stupid things that didn't even make sense to lie about, you know. It's because it's what I've always done. So she was there for me through all of that. So why wouldn't I be there?
Yeah, I remember too, in my early days, like, I would still lie about small things, like as simple as like what I had for lunch. And I didn't even know why. Like, there was no reason to lie about it, except for the fact that I was diabetic and like I didn't want anybody judging me because I had a cheeseburger. You know, like, it was more like confrontation, more like that kind of situation. But yeah, that was. And then, you know, as you get in recovery and you really like dig in and you know, a lot of that stuff goes away. A lot of those behaviors change. But in the early recovery, that was a struggle as well, just like the small things. Now, I kind of want to go back just to compare for people listening, is like when Val was gone, you know, in the casino and doing these things, and you were home when she was in active addiction, like, what was that like? Like, I know the thoughts of that.
Well, at first it was, for me, it was, you know, when she wasn't out that much, I was like, that's something she enjoys doing. I golf, you know, and a lot, but, you know, we give each other that space. But towards the end, when there were times, I mean, and I would text her, when are you coming home? Because I wouldn't want to go to sleep, because there was a couple times. One time I actually had to go up there and she was in front of a machine, and but she was drinking. So I thought she just, you know, and she would tell me, I need to sober up. But after a while, at the end, I remember saying to myself, this isn't working for me. But how do I tell her this isn't working for me? Not knowing that she's got this addiction, I'm just like, I absolutely don't understand how you can sit in front of a machine for 8 hours and just go over and over and over. So it was a little, I mean, at the end, probably the last year or so, more often than not, I would say to myself, this just isn't working for me. But I didn't say anything to her because I didn't want to. We kind of have a really good, a good relationship where we give each other our space and we allow each other to do our things. And I didn't want to seem like I was trying to inhibit her in any of that. I don't know if it would eventually I would have said something, but I do know that it was frustrating, and I didn't know anything about any of the money. We keep our money separate. We each pay our own, you know, so I didn't know what she was spending. We have our retirement accounts. We have to have each other's signature to get into, so she couldn't get into that. The one thing that did surprise me is when she told me she dipped into, we put money away for our grandchildren. And she dipped into that. So I could, and listen, I understand. I know if I was in that situation, there's money sitting there that you could maybe pay back, you know, and you might not have to even account for it for 18 years when we're going to give it to them. But it surprised me because I know Val. I know how, you know, she pays her bills. She's always, you know, she makes fun of me because I go to the grocery store and I don't even look at prices. I just get stuff. And she said, well, you can get it cheaper over there. But, you know, it was, yeah. So I don't know how else to put it. It would have probably come to a head at some point for me, but,
I'm glad it didn't for you
just getting
guys. I'm glad
close.
that, you know, the universe pushed you into this direction, Val, put all these things on you at the same time, whether it was the financial heaviness, the hearing, constant hearing everybody talk about honesty being a core part. I know that this is something that a lot of gamblers struggle with, right? It's not male or female specific. It is if you're a gambler and you're hiding it from your partner, spouse, like it is a big issue in this community. And so to be able to kind of hear that perspective is going to be really helpful. I know everybody's situation is going to be different. You know, not everybody's going to have the same relationship or their partner's going to have the same perspective. But it still boils down to, just like you said, it's issues that we have to work on individually. You know, we have to work on those issues ourselves. And as we start to work on those, everything else just kind of starts to ripple out. So how is life now? And I just have to say, I remember when Val came in to the BGS community. I'm very active in the BGS communities, all except for Instagram. Please do not message me on Instagram if you're listening to this. But like I see the people who were there and who are interactive, and you were coming to the meetings and doing these things. And I remember when you were having to go for walks, you know, to do these meetings on your own, and you were really honest. I think there was a lot. You got to give yourself credit for the honesty you were doing, and you were like, "I'm not being honest with him. I'm not telling him yet," and doing those things. And then I remember the moment that you shared that you did have this conversation, that you finally just let it out, and it was after the Jodi Bechtold episode that came out. And I just remember being so proud of you, and so proud that I got to see this journey with you, and just got to, so I just want to say that, like, to see you, your growth in that, and to see that, be able to witness that for you both is just a really, it's a really good feeling to see that.
Yeah. And I still remember, like, it's no joke when people say it was a weight lifted from the shoulders, because I mean, I really did feel, honestly, 25 pounds lighter physically, because it was just that much that I was carrying around by holding it in. I mean, first of all, you know, the 15 year lie of the addiction, and then, you know, 7 more months of doing this all in secret. Like, gosh, it was just amazing. But, and then it just freed me up, because it was like, I mean, this sounds silly, but it was like, I can order GA books, and I can tell them I'm going into the office to get on a meeting. And, you know, and I, like, it was just a, you know, so much more freedom. But also just the whole, like, all right. And one of the things I do remember I said, and I feel like I've actually lived this, is like, I am not going to lie to you about anything. Unless I'm planning a surprise birthday party. Like, I mean, nothing, unless it's a surprise party. That's it. That's the only
Yeah,
time. And we don't
we don't do
do
that
that.
anyway,
So
so.
yeah. So it really was because I just feel like, because I just can't ever go back to, you know, lying to him again. You know, so and actually feel like I don't think, had that experience of just like not even helping, like lying about stupid stuff. Maybe I haven't, I'm not admitting, but like, because now it really is like almost no matter what it is, I just don't. And I think it's because it was such a horrible feeling to be so dishonest for so long that I just can't anymore. But I don't know. There might be something that I'm, you know, not thinking of, but it's important to me now,
So this
so.
had to have impacted your guys' relationship in a really powerful way, right? Just the coming clean, and then like now how things are now. You're not disappearing, right? I mean, I know you have other things going on, and you both still travel, but it's got to be a different dynamic in the evenings now.
I am home almost every night, all the time. If I'm either, you know, that's the other thing though, is like also in, you know, in this mix is my mom is elderly and she's had some health issues, and I've needed to be there to help her like a lot, a lot, a lot. And so I would have, that is maybe the new thing that's, you know, so like if I'm not home now, I'm really there. You know what I mean? It's like, and he could even call two or three times while, you know, and like, I'm always where I say I am instead of, you know, saying I'm somewhere and being at the casino. So that's for sure. But yeah, it does. And as a matter of fact, like, and I'm not, I think I was maybe in the beginning, there were some nights where I was feeling bored. Like, I'm not bored. I'm actually just like really happy to just be at home, even if it's doing nothing. But I think it's because there are so many things to do, you know, with like, whether it's reading or listening to the podcast or, you know, whatever it is, I'm okay with that. And I do identify sometimes with, gamblers in recovery that say like, you missed the high. Like it was, there were moments where it was a lot of fun getting that whole adrenaline rush, but, gosh, it's not worth, you know, to me, the feeling of peace and just sleeping well every night, is so much better than whatever that high was, you know? So yeah, every now and then I might get like a moment of, you know, fear of missing out kind of thing. But not enough to want to go back. Cause the horrible feelings that I had, like, and how much I hated it at the end, are still fresh for me, even, you know, 579 days later, you know, it's so.
Fantastic. What about you, Mike? How have things changed?
Well, I, she is home more, which is good. And I think that we have a different connection. Right. I think that's a very good thing because I didn't know for a long time whether she understood my journey through recovery and some of the things I was doing. And I used to feel guilty. I'd go to meetings a lot. For like probably about 8 years, I kind of strayed away from meetings. I was doing a lot of traveling it's a spiritual program for me. And when I strayed away from my people, I knew that I needed to get back there. I think that, you know, just a better understanding of each other and support of each other is where we're at now. I think not much else has changed. I mean, we both just work a lot and, it's like when we do get home, it's like just taking a breath, and I talk a lot more about retirement than she does. I keep saying I have 5 more years, I'm going to retire. And I don't care if I, you know, she says I have another year and I'm like, I will wave to you from the front, from the porch, but I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to us just having time to just, I mean, with no set plan. And, I'm just really looking forward to that. And I'm glad that, she can feel relief in that area because I think she's earned it. So she's a inspiration to me. And I hope that we can just support each other. That's all. And I hope if she feels, you know, like she, you know, gets itchy, that she can talk to me, you know, but I would always direct her to her people, you know, because I don't understand. I understand addiction, but Val will laugh because we went to Vegas one time and we're playing blackjack and I have zero desire and I'm just throwing money on the table, hoping that I'll lose so I can walk away. And it's just, she just couldn't understand that. But my mind is like, when I'm a drinker, the money I put on the table, I could have, you know, it would have been drinks. Right. So either way, but again, I think we're really,
yeah,
it just brings us closer.
If you could say, Mike, if you could say anything to somebody listening to this who maybe still hasn't come clean and who's trying to figure out the best way to do that, what would your conversation be to that person? Yeah, I'll put you on the spot. I'm going to put you on the spot.
Wow. I have a lot. No, I actually have a lot of those because I sponsor people in my own recovery. And, you know, I think it really comes down to, when are you going to be ready? You know, it's something that no one else can tell you you need to do. And it's, you know, and I think I can just tell when someone is ready And for me, it's that, you know, you have a place to go. There's people that understand exactly what you're going through, but you have to have a little faith and trust and to open up and build a community. I think if you come into recovery and you're isolated, you're not going to, eventually it isn't going to work. You need the people, you need to be able, and you need to work the steps in the program. And it's, for me, it's a guidebook for life, and it's continuous. So I work with a lot of new people, and, you know, the whole thing around, you know, what am I going to do now for fun? And I keep saying, were you really having that much fun? You know, we didn't come to this point, you know, on a height, you know, on the, we weren't killing it. And so sometimes it's just reminding people and kind of just telling them you love them. And, you know, and I always say, if you want to get better, that's my business. You know, I'll help you.
Yeah.
So that's what I do.
That's a good way to put it. Cause I get that a lot too, you know, like, but it's so much fun. And it's like, but are you really having that much fun if you're trying to figure out if it's a problem? You know, it's, that's an interesting thing. Even if it's like AA or NA or, you know, whatever somebody's struggling with, when they say, but it's so much fun. And I'm like, oh, because there for the end at me, it wasn't fun anymore. It hadn't been fun for a very long time. And it was like very much an autopilot thing. So when somebody is like, but I'm, you know, they still are like, oh, it's so fun and I'm going to miss it. It's sometimes hard for me to get on that level because it had been so long since I'd been at that level. And it's like, makes me wish I had recognized it then, you know, but, that's a good point. It's like, how much fun were you really having if it's causing an issue in your life?
But I think for me anyway, I tried to stop so many times, but the physical, like, that's where I really identify with it, isn't the actual substance or the gambling or that it's the, I would stop and kind of feel a little better. And then I was left with me and I had to deal with me, and the pain of what I was going through was much more familiar than the pain I was trying to go through. And it would always draw me back just because I didn't know how to deal with the pain of getting better. And I think when I work with new people, it's kind of like, that's my experience. So that's what I can, that's all I can tell you is what worked for me. And absolutely, you know, you working with Val, understanding what she's going through, is that's the blessing of this program. And I wish everybody in the world had a program to follow.
Right. Know? I tell people all the time, anybody can benefit from step work. Anybody. Yeah. Like, whether, it doesn't matter if you were struggling with something. I mean, what step work does is it just helps us recognize where we're at and where we need to be. And it's wonderful work. I'm working my steps for the second time now, and it's something that I will continue to do throughout my recovery to stay connected to where I want to be as a person. And, you know, sometimes life will push us a little bit away from that, and it's time to regroup and get back on it. So,
and the best thing is, I think in the groups of recovery, 99% of the people in the room want you to be the best person you can be, and that you don't get anywhere else. Yeah.
The recovery community is one of the best communities in the world. I mean, I hate that there is, you know, a thing that gets you there, right? I hate the journey that gets you there, but the recovery community in itself is one of the most beautiful places. And it's because of that journey, I think, you know, that we've all experienced. And I've never been, I think, so surrounded by support and love. And I've never felt so supported until I entered the recovery space. And whether it's for whatever you're recovering from, it's just, it can be such a beautiful place. All right. Well, let's go ahead and kind of wind this up. And Val, how are you doing? 500, what'd you say? 579 days?
I think it's something like that. I didn't pull up my app, but I think that's about right. Yeah. Look, I am absolutely grateful. That's, you know, where we started today. And that's, I really am. I know how blessed I am to have Mike. And I've heard, you know, you're right. Like, I've heard, thank God. So anyhow, it did absolutely, his own experience made it much easier for me. I would like to believe that that even if he didn't have that, he would still have been, you know, his understanding. But I'm fortunate in that perspective. Yeah. So, you know, I think it really is about, just going back to the whole thing about recovery, though. It's like, I also think it's, you know, my advice would be like, don't try to do, don't waste all those years or time trying to do it on your own. Like, find connection is everything. It really is everything. And I don't know how anybody does it without some sort of connection. So whatever that community looks like, whether it's online, whether it's in person, whether it's GA, whether it's recovered, you know, whatever it is, find what you connect with. Cause I think we all need that support.
So. Yeah. We all need that tribe around us that understands what we're going through and can be there when, you know, that gives us that accountability, right? It's connection, accountability, purpose. Like, all these things are what keep us moving forward. And so I am so grateful that you are where you're at today. And I'm grateful to you and Mike for coming on and just sharing your story. I want to make sure that you both are good, right? This is a very vulnerable, you know, thing to talk about and do. And especially as a couple, you know, to come on and share this. So, tremendously grateful for your guys' time.
Thanks. Thanks for everything you're doing, Christina.
Thanks, Val.
All right.